You're now listening to Real Estate Journeys with Matthew Baltzell.
What's going on, everybody? This is your boy, Matty B, aka Matthew Baltzell, and welcome back to Real Estate Journeys. Before we start today's episode, I first want to just thank everybody who has shown their support thus far on iTunes and given some good reviews. Greatly appreciated. All the shout outs on social media and the sharing, much appreciated. It really does help support the channel, especially in the first 8 weeks. iTunes is the most crucial. So if you feel as though today provided any value in today's episode, please head on over to iTunes, review it. If you don't like it, tell me why, because your feedback's important. But if you love it, boom, even better, give me a 5-star review. I'd greatly appreciate it. That said, I'd like to introduce Gino Barbaro, who is an investor, business owner, and entrepreneur. He has been investing in real estate for 15 years and has grown his multifamily portfolio to over 1,100 units in just 6 years and over $70 million in assets. He has teamed up with Jake Stenziano to create JakeandGino.com, a real estate education company that offers coaching and training in real estate investing. He is the best-selling author of Wheelbarrow Profits. Gino is a graduate of IPEC, Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching, and is a certified professional coach. He is also the author of the best-selling cookbook, Family, Food, and the Friars. He currently resides in Florida with his beautiful wife, Julia, and their 6 children, Gabriella, Michael, Sophia, Veronica, Cecilia, and Laura. So with that said, let's jump into it and welcome Gino to the show. So Gino, how are you doing today?
Good, Matthew. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's so good to have you on the show today. Gino, where are you right now, actually?
I am in St. Augustine, Florida.
St. Augustine, Florida. And where is Gino? He's in Kentucky, is that right?
No, Jake is in Tennessee, Knoxville.
Jake is in Knoxville. Okay, cool. All right, cool. And so could you give the listeners a little bit about who you are and your story and how you got into real estate?
Sure. Let's go back to 1994. First day I opened the restaurant, bought a restaurant back in 94 with my family, started making payroll. So I've been making payrolls, I like to tell people, over 25 years. Yeah. So that's the true entrepreneur, when you start paying others first. It's like real estate, right? Everyone else gets paid first, and then whatever's left over, you get it, right? The problem with the restaurant is every week has to be replicated. There's no passive income to it, right? I love the job. I love doing the real estate restaurant. I was with my dad, with my brother. We can fast forward to 2007. My father passes away. And, you know, it left a little bit of a void. It was a family place. I worked with him all the time. I just love being with him. I love being with the family. The Great Recession comes in 2008, and everybody gets affected. I don't care what market you're in. On top of the Great Recession, you're talking about the internet. We're doing this call over, you know, you're in Thailand, I'm in St. Augustine, Florida. Everything changes. I mean, the whole restaurant model changes. People start eating out less. They start wanting a different type of service, different technologies going on. When you're a mom and pop place and your brother partner doesn't want to change, you start saying to yourself, I need to find something else. I've got 6 kids. We homeschool our 6 kids. So I'm not your typical person. I just felt trapped there, working harder, making less. I'm sure everyone on this podcast or the majority of people can relate to that, especially going into the Great Recession. So I said to myself, I need to do something. I had always liked real estate. I had owned a couple of smaller properties, made some big mistakes back in the 2000s. I thought it was risky, but I said, you know what? I'm going to do real estate. I'm not going to do it in New York because New York is just too expensive. Let me look somewhere else. And, you know, as luck would have it, my partner Jake was a drug rep, a pharmaceutical rep at my restaurant. And I saw the kind of person he was. He was very detail-oriented, which is not typical of a pharmaceutical rep. They fly by the seat of their pants. He's very structured. When he needed an order, going down to a doctor's office, he'd tell me a week before, 2 weeks before, everything was planned out. I'm like, I can go into business with this guy and partner with him. So that's what we did. He moved down in 2011. We started looking at deals. It took us 18 months to buy our first deal. And, you know, I tell everybody the first deal is the hardest deal because you have no credibility. If you're not getting, I was getting coached at the time. So I had education, I had mentors, but it was just difficult remotely. Didn't know what to expect. In the meantime, Jake was down there. He wanted to go buy a house, slowed our progress down. Right. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing that I learned was you have to be patient. You have to be persistent and you just have to really learn the space, really go out there and network with people. And I was fortunate because he was boots on the ground. I had invested in Rochester, New York back in 08, 09, bought a couple of duplexes. I liked it. I liked the property manager. I wasn't managing it. I was getting it self-managed. The problem for me was it wasn't scalable. If I had lived in Rochester, I would own hundreds of units in there. I just couldn't scale it up. I was buying a duplex here and there, and that's what I didn't want. Hard for me to do a business right that way. So when Jake went down to Knoxville, I said, you know what? I can invest outside the market. I can get really good returns down there. I didn't know it at the time. I just felt it. Everyone was moving to the Southeast. And, you know, lo and behold, taxes are better down there. Quality of living is better down there. The cost of living is much better down there. And they're having population and employment growth down there, you know, for the last 6-7 years. So that's how I ended up getting down there.
Mm. And so you obviously you started with single family residence. Is that correct?
I started, my first deal was a fourplex back in 2002. And you know what? You want to call it residential? I still think it's in the residential space. I got residential financing. You know, I always tell people think big, but start small. If people are telling you to start with a 100-unit deal and you're saying to yourself, I can't do that, it doesn't matter what they're telling you. You have to start with what you feel comfortable with. If a duplex house hacking works for you, do that because the next deal is going to be a fiveplex. I'm going to put up a book to you. I want you to take a look at this book. It's called The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle.
Yeah, we learn
by making mistakes. If you're thinking about buying a 100-unit and you can't buy it, you're never going to learn because you're never going to make the mistakes, right? On our first 25-unit deal, we not only did we make mistakes, we solved problems, we dealt with tenant issues, we learned how to property manage. If we had not taken that step to buy that 25-unit and targeted a 100-unit, we never would have gotten into the game. And the name of the game is to get into the game, figure out what you're doing wrong, learn, and that's how we learn. And once you're immersed in it and you start doing it, if you don't like it, great. You've only got 25 units or 4 units. You can always sell, but I guarantee you, you will like it. And then all of a sudden, you can progress on and get into bigger and better things if you want.
Mm. How important would you say it is to have a partnership when you're initially starting out to really leverage that and learn off other people's experiences and have them complement your weaknesses?
That's a great question because I think most people hear the word partner and they want to run. I was always in partnership. I was in partnership with my brother. Wanted to kill him. I'm sure he wanted to kill me from time to time. You know, it's just the way it is with partnerships. But at the end of the day, you need to have very similar goals. Jake and I had really similar goals. He's about 10 years younger than me, but he still wanted to get out of the rat race. He was a hard worker. Core values, integrity, ethics, morals. That's what we both had. We both had that. And it's important to have that. And if your partner doesn't have that and you do, just don't even go into the partnership. I think a couple things with partnerships. I think people overlook the fact that identity is really important. You need to identify as a multifamily investor, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're in a chef coat, it's really hard for you to do that. But when you have a partner who's holding you accountable and who's pushing you, that's why education is really important. That's why masterminds is super important because they hold you accountable. Because if you've got to call 3 brokers that week and you didn't call them, you're not going to say anything to yourself. But if your partner is expecting you to do that and you don't do that, there's a little different conversation going on there. And the other fact is that he's got kids. He's feeding his kids. I'm feeding my kids. So that accountability is I'm going to be on this podcast with you this morning because Jake and Gino needs to grow. He's got to be on the property management day to day because that part of the business needs to be taken care of. So partnerships can be, you know, used as an accountability. And also, we do have complementary skill sets. We do have some things that we do differently. So bringing that up and being able to, when you first start out, you start out with an investment. From that investment, we can talk about multifaceted. There's so many different layers of this business that you can grow into. You can do the underwriting. You can raise the capital. You can start an education company. You can start a property management company. You can start doing mortgages. You can start doing a syndication company. I mean, it becomes endless, and you cannot do it all by yourself. There's no way that you can do it all by yourself, right? When you start growing and you have 1,000 units, you need to handle so many different areas. I mean, we spend 5 to 6 hours a week alone just on our what we call level 10 meetings with our videographer, one with the videographer, one with our education guy, one with our capital guy who does mortgages, and we have one with our syndication team. And on top of that, we're doing a deal right now that's $17 million. We have a weekly call on a due diligence doc. So there's 5 or 6 hours gone from the week to be able to handle that. And if you don't have partners, it's going to be very difficult. Now, that being said, Matthew, you're not going to start there, obviously. But I think when you start in real estate or any endeavor in life, you always have to think of the end in mind. What are you trying to achieve? Are you trying to grow a company, or are you just trying to buy 50 or 60 assets where units where you're just going to, hey, you know what? I'm happy with $4,000 or $5,000 a month in cash flow. So sit down, figure out what your end goal is, and then, you know, create your company and create your vision from that.
Yeah, I think that's very important what you said as far as, you know, think of the end goal. I think a lot of people that are getting into real estate, I will come across comments on Bigger Pockets, and people won't think of the exit strategy or the end game in mind. Like they're, it'll be very blasé, you know. It'll be like, I want to get a 24 units. I'm like, oh, like how long do you want the hold period to be? Mm-hmm. And some would be like, oh, yeah, I want to hold it for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Do you want to, you know, I mean, that ties a lot into your finances, how you finance the property. And I think that question in itself, people don't even really think about it, the end game, the exit strategy, because, you know, especially the way the economy is right now, like you don't want to get into something that you don't initially plan on, and then you're going to go belly up and you're going to lose it, and you can make your investors. So you can really shoot yourself in the foot before you even start if you don't have your exit strategy. So I think that's a very important note that you said there.
I think, Matthew, for one, another point that I'd like to make is real estate is a business. Whether you're buying a single family home and holding it or flipping it, fixing and flipping it, it is a business. You need systems and you need people to help you. You can't be running to Home Depot and buying paint. That's not your job. That's not where the value is. That's a $10 an hour job. You're trying to do a $25,000 or $30,000 flip. You're trying to get that thing off the table and done as quickly as possible. So we all look at it as tenants and toilets. This multifamily will allow you to hire these people to help you to scale. That's the whole idea, to scale the business. I guess the value of the business, whether it's intrinsic or it's in the asset itself, you're managing the asset. And then on top of that, you're managing people to help you manage the asset. I think the majority of people in Bigger Pockets are just looking at, I want to get into it. I want to just, you know, buy a property and fix it up or hold it. Yeah, but there's got to be an ulterior motive. It is a business. Don't kid yourself.
Yeah.
And the better you are at business, the better you're going to be at real estate.
And I think from one of the things that I've learned with Boardwalk Wealth is how, you know, it is a business and how big of a scope it is. And I think people don't realize that. And I think if you are new, as a new investor, and you're looking to find like your niche, solve a problem of a syndicator or somebody within that business, because you might be able to have marketing skills, and you know, Jake and Gino might be lacking marketing skills, and you can get your foot in the door that way. Or it could be maybe you bring capital to the deal, or maybe you bring relationships, or maybe you bring financing. Like, there's millions of different things that you can bring. And I think that people want to always, I see comments always about getting into, commercial real estate and getting into bigger properties. And you can almost in a sense say, the bigger the property, the bigger the team. You know, you're going to have property managers, you'll have lawyers, syndicators, like all sorts of different people that it's not like you see, oh, syndicator. Like if you're new, you might just think like that's the guy, he runs everything. But there's lawyers, there's accountants, there's CPAs, like there's millions of different people. So I think for people that are listening to this, that's very important to realize, because I didn't realize that starting out either.
It's important. If you're a contractor out there and you want to get into multifamily, find the guy who's buying deals. Be part of the construction company. Create a construction company that helps the multifamily assets, and you can do your own construction. If you're a plumber, how about going into buying a 30 unit with somebody? You take care of all the plumbing, all the whatever issues. If you're an electrician, whatever. If you're a cleaning company, let's do trash valet for these 100 unit pluses. I'll take care of the trash valet. I'll take care of all the turns for the cleaning. You know what? Give me 5% of equity. I'll bring a little money. You're part of the team now. You can start scaling up. Like you just said, bring value in any way. And people don't think of it that way. They think of, I need to buy these 100 units all by myself. It's not how it is in life. You can see all these big companies, they are all partnered with other people or doing joint ventures and getting together. And you know what? Bringing value to that asset, to that deal is critical.
Yeah. So with that said, if you are a new investor and you are looking to get into multifamily and you want to add value, or let's say, I know a lot of people are struggling with finding deals and deal sourcing, how would you, as a new investor, go about trying to find your first property or find one that fits your investment criteria?
Well, this is a little self-serving for me, but the first thing you need to do is, if you're not totally educated on the entire space, I think you need to spend, I don't want to say spend, I think you need to invest thousands of dollars in yourself if you're going to go long-term. And I can say this because I've done it. I've taken two different coaching programs in real estate. I became a certified life coach at IPEC, spent thousands of dollars doing that. Has nothing to do with real estate, but has everything to do with real estate, because it's all about your level of energy. It's all about your energy blocks. It's all about setting goals. Most people that come to me, they're initially like, I want to buy real estate, but then you dive deeper into what's going on and you're like, wow. So think about that first. Think about maybe hiring life coaches, seeing what your goals are, seeing what your big plateau is, what you want to do. What is your why? Because if you tell me your why, I'll tell you how to do it. And real estate can fit into that a lot of times, right? So I think the first thing is spend money on your investing. Learn how to, our proprietary framework, buy right, manage right, finance right, and now syndicate right. It's important to learn all four facets of the business, right? Let's take it a step further. The next thing is you need to focus on a specific market. Where are you going? Is it Denver, Colorado, Matthew? I don't really like Denver too much because their prices are so high. Everything's really elevated. I'm not really familiar with that market, although it's really still emerging. So focus on a market. That's the first thing to do. Don't compare three different markets where you can't build teams and you can't source. Really like hone in on a market. Once you choose the market, and if you can do it in your backyard, great. And if you can't, find another market. Focus on that market. The next one is what Jake and I really made a mistake on our first deal was start creating a team. Obviously, you want real estate brokers in that market. They are the, you know, window to getting deals. And, you know, it's going to take you a few months to build rapport with these brokers. Start building out your team. Can you get an inspector there? Can you get an accountant there? Can you get a property management company there? Can you get an attorney there, a title company? Start building those people. Contractors. So when you start getting those deals, all of a sudden things start escalating. You have them on your team. We didn't do that. We went to our first deal. We were going to do a due diligence. We've had an inspector a week before before we got the deal. We found an inspector. We didn't have a contractor. Luckily, we were able to get a couple of things done before we took the property over. But it's important to do that. And then once you start doing that, it's going to take you a couple months. It's the long game, because they're not going to give you deals from day one, right? They have Jake and Gino they can give deals to. You have to get into their quote unquote good graces. We did a podcast with John Rulin called Gifties. John Rulin is head of Giftology. Think, be creative. Think outside the box. Brokers and realtors don't need us. But if you can think of adding value to them, giving them a gift, you know, building rapport with them. And over the months, once they send deals over, analyze the deals right away, send it back to them and say, listen, you know, Joe, deal is a little bit too pricey for me. This is what I can pay. Thanks for the opportunity. If you have any other deals, just send them over my way. I'd love to analyze them. Do what you say and say what you do. And that's why the power of partners is really important, because if you've got three or four people looking at a deal, your balance sheets are stronger. You have more credibility. And I think, you know, last, we like to use a credibility book. We create a credibility book on our, we didn't have one for the first two deals. On our third deal, it was 136 units. The banker actually told Jake, this is why you guys got the financing. Never saw a credibility book before. It's basically a business plan outlining how you're going to get your money, why you like the market, any assets that you own. It's all about what you do and how you can create value and how you're going to return money to whoever you're borrowing it from, investing it with. So that was a really crucial step for us. But I mean, initially, you're going to get, y'all ain't doing business down here. We got it. You're going to get that. You have to fight through that. And if your why is strong enough, you're going to figure out how to do that. You need the accountability. That's why part of being masterminds and part of being communities is important, because everyone's having the same struggle as you are. If you can hang in there and keep looking, it will break through sooner or later. You're going to say to yourself, wow, I got this 20 unit that just fell in my lap. That's what people say. And I say to them, it doesn't really fall in your lap. You've put in a lot of work for a deal to fall in your lap.
It's crazy, because you hear these things over and over and over and over and over and over again, and then they finally click. Mm-hmm. We just closed 138 unit in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And I remember we look at a deal and Omar would say, all right, like, let's look at everything. And like, we analyze it, right? Like, I'm like analyzing deals. doesn't work. He's like, all right, we reply. This is why it doesn't work. Like, he's like, crucial. We got to get this back 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, boom. You know, and sometimes, you know, whatever your investment criteria is, like, our wheelhouse is between 100 and 200 units. So even if they send us an 85 unit, hey, you know, Jerry, just let you know, like, this doesn't fit our criteria. You know, we're thinking of more or something than this. And where we stuck out was we had three specific submarkets that we liked, which gave the broker a good idea. We went and we walked the properties with the broker. We stayed on the front of mind with the broker. And, you know, it's little things like this that make you seem not like you're just kicking the tires. And how you say things with, like, the credibility book, or what was it? Credibility book. Things like, little things like that, you know, it's little steps that kind of set the tone and the stage for what you're doing. If you're a new real estate, I always tell people, if you're a new real estate investor, you know, don't shoot yourself in the foot and say, like, I don't have anything. If you've read 1,000 books, like, create a website. Say you've read 1,000 books. Say you've taken 5 courses. Say this is what you're trying to do, fix and flip homes, trying to wholesale. If I'm speaking with somebody initially and they show me that, I will be like, you are more serious than the guy that I've spent 5 minutes with who said the exact same thing, and he's looking for a cash flowing property in a good area. Like, you know, it's these little things that kind of set you apart. I think that's very interesting what you said about the credibility book.
Well, what's cool is that also you mentioned, I think people love Google, right? When you choose that market and you focus on the market and you've got Chattanooga, Tennessee, you need to get on a plane. You need to opt into all the brokers' deals. You need to get deals in your market, and you need to schedule some property tours. You need to schedule face-to-face and spend a couple of days in the market. Now, if it's in your backyard, great, even better. But I will guarantee you, anyone listening to this who's investing new in multifamily in their backyard thinks they know it's their backyard. You do not know your backyard until you start analyzing job growth, population growth, rent growth, you know, the value and the cost of the market itself. You know, you got absorption, delivery. I guarantee you any new investor doesn't know any of that. So maybe their backyard might actually stink. But even so, you need to get on those property tours and do face-to-face with the broker because they like that. They think you're serious, right? And when you do bring a credibility book or you do bring your acquisition criteria sheet, whatever you want to call it, you know, like you said, you might be a new investor up to 50 units. I'm looking at, you know, $50,000 per unit I can go to. I'm looking at a 6 cap, whatever that is. I'm looking for X amount of cash on cash term, whatever the criteria may be. You have it there. You need to speak the lingo. You need to know how to talk to these brokers. And I will tell you, the majority of brokers in the market are not multifamily brokers. In every market, you'll probably find, depending on the size, in Jacksonville, probably maybe 10, 12 top multifamily brokers out there. You've got Colliers, you've got ARA, you might have a Bracadia broker. There are not that many. CBR, there are not that many brokers out there who are multifamily. Jacksonville's a pretty big market. It's over 1 million population, so you might have a little bit more. But I went up to Cleveland a couple of years ago. There's only 3 or 4 really good quality multifamily brokers. You have to sell them, but they have to sell you also. So if you know the criteria, you know the language. If you ask a broker what the cap rate is and he's like, huh? Not the guy, you know what I'm saying? So don't waste your time.
Yeah. One of the things that we also do with, like, the initial screenings is going on the property appraisals and seeing what the property was last traded for, trying to gather as much information we can. And, you know, if you're speaking with an experienced broker and you already know when the property was last traded and you know, let's say you think you know the cap rate or things of that nature, and you're speaking with the broker and you say, oh, like, when was the property last traded? And he says, I don't know. You know, it's like, oh, okay, like, maybe this broker doesn't know that much. Or he says, oh, it was traded 6 months ago or 7 months ago. So then you think, oh, okay, like, they might have most of just recent added value. Like, I can go and look and see what it last traded for before that. Okay, it was a 2-year hold period. How much meat on the bones left for me? And the more information you're kind of learning and gathering, that's, like, that's what you're really trying to do, is just gather. And then you formulate your own bubble, if you will, you know?
Yes. You formulate a story. That's right. So that's what you want. And most brokers don't know a lot. They're just listening, right? So I had a student actually up in Cleveland. One of the questions that we like to ask is to the seller, do you have any other assets? So my seller asked the brokers, both brokers, They didn't know. I mean, how don't you know that the seller has other assets? You as a broker, as a sales guy, you want to know, hey, John, I'm selling you 30 unit. Do you have any other assets down the road? Yeah. So my buyer, my student looked like a rock star because the seller had other assets. So do you think in your negotiations, maybe on the first one, you're not going to beat him up totally and say, you know what? He wants 2 million too. It's worth 1 million nine. You know what? I can go to 2 million one because I think I can get the next 30 units down the road at a better price. So questions like that, things like that, you'll pick up as you learn investing. But those are important questions that even brokers don't ask sometimes.
Yeah. And then you, to piggyback off what you were saying, you said kind of do what you said you were going to do. And when you say, this is what I'm interested in, they send you something. You reply. You gain a little trust, like these guys are serious. You walk the property, like it becomes a little more serious. And then all of a sudden, when you close on a 12 unit, a 32 unit, 100 unit, what have you, now when you say, hey, you know, we are interested in the same submarket or different submarket, they're like, these guys are closers, these guys are players, who's going to get the next deal that I could, because they're I mean, if you look at it from their perspective too, especially in this hot market, right, I can give this to, you know, Jake and Gino and they can close within 30 days, no problem, they've done this 3 or 4 times. Or should I go with, you know, Matthew and his mom from Denver, Colorado, who, you know, don't even know the cap rate or the lingo. It's a very interesting dichotomy.
It is, and that's why, like I said, you have to be able to sell yourself and put in strong offers, put in the offers, and then, you know, see what happens. But just keep repeating that. And that's the thing, Matthew. We probably didn't mention it, but it's a lot of work. It's hard work. I mean, it's a lot involved. There's a lot of techniques you need to learn. But at the end of the day, that's one of the things that the restaurant taught me was hard work. I worked on the weekends. I worked during holidays. I worked during a week. I worked when it snowed. Didn't matter. And that's what real estate is. If you want to be successful and be the top 10 or 15% or 20% in the industry, you need to really work hard. And, you know, working hard and working smart can come in conjunction, but it's still sending out those emails. It's still calling the brokers back. It's still calling back the next day when you're doing another deal at the same time and talking to the banker and all. So don't kid yourself. It's not easy, but no business is easy when you want to excel in it.
Yeah. I want to take it back for a second to the investment criteria. I know a lot of people, when they hear investment criteria, how would somebody go about setting investment criteria for themselves? And what would you recommend that people should kind of focus on? I know some people buy on cap rates, some people don't, some people are looking for you know, household income in a certain area. Can you dive into your recommendation?
Well, it's funny because we're vertically integrated now, so we do everything. So our criteria is 3 hours of Knoxville. So we've got one deal in Louisville and a second deal in Louisville. Why do we like Louisville, Kentucky? Decent job growth, a lot of manufacturing, workforce housing, blue collar, affordable. People are not fleeing. It's an affordable city. They're actually spending $12 billion downtown. So there's a lot of money coming into it. We like the Southeast. Don't like blue. You know, I'm more socially conservative. I'm conservative. Has nothing to do with it. But the blue states, people are fleeing the blue states. The blue states are too taxed, too high, in New York especially. I mean, once they start giving away free stuff, that hurts. I mean, when you're telling Amazon not to come and they, you know, basically could, you know, 25,000 jobs plus the multiplier effect of another 75,000, you're talking 100,000 jobs and you're saying, well, you know what? I don't know. I don't really like that. That gives a signal to investors that, you know what? Time has come that maybe we shouldn't be there. I think the cost of living up there is tremendous. And like I said, the tax base there is hard. The tenant laws are not the greatest. They stink in New York. California is tough. You see what's going on in Oregon. They're starting to put, you know, restrictions on rent. When the governments start getting involved in the local laws, I don't like that because it restricts. And when you start subsidizing something, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, prices will go up. Walk into a post office. They're stuck in the 60s. They haven't made money in over a decade. They lost $4 billion last year, and they are the only game in town. So when you start seeing government getting into stuff, you have to say to yourself, there's a little stuff going on. In the Southeast, it's a little bit freer. I mean, Tennessee is, you know, Tennessee and Florida, they have no state income tax. It's a driver down here. People base their decisions on that. They do have job growth. They do have population growth. I like to have metros, you know, between 800,000 and a million people. I mean, I don't want to be in that top tier market, whether it's a Miami, because the cap rates and the valuations are really high there. And you think about it, you know, people from overseas, that's where money flocks to. They flocks to those beautiful cities, whether it's LA, New York, Chicago. I don't, you know, those really top tier markets, because that's what investors hear. When you tell them Louisville, they're like, huh? But that's what we like. We like to be in those, you know, those other secondary markets, as you like to say. And I mean, if you're syndicating a deal, you need to hit a certain cash on cash number to be able to pay your investors. So I would say that's got to be at least a 10% cash on cash return to be able to give, you know, the majority of that cash flow to investors. Cap rates, it's harder to buy in cap rates. When I started out, you know, 5 years ago, we were buying at an 8 cap. In Tennessee, we can still buy assets at 7 caps, B property assets, B minus C properties at 7 caps. What you need to focus on is when you're buying a property, whether you're buying it at a 5 cap or 6 cap, can you buy it at the prevailing cap rate? And can you really bring value to that property? Because if you can bring value to the property and increase it, I was doing a little numbers here. I wish I had the numbers in front of me. As far as buying a property with a 5 cap, raising the NOI, that goes to an 8 cap. And then all of a sudden, if you're going to go back and refi it to a 7 cap, you've added a substantial amount of value to that. So think about where you can add value to a property. Don't always focus on, because you can buy something in California at a 3 cap where it is, raise the cap rate to a 5 and then refi it back down to a 3 or 4. You're still going to make a ton of money there. Don't always focus on the cap. But that being said, I'm a little wary of California. When they get hit, it's such a vertical market. It's not as linear as the markets I've been talking about, that when it does, those cap rates can go from 3 to 5 where you bought, and all of a sudden all that value you added into it is just like, it's all squandered. It's all gone. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of times when people are trying to, when they're new to investing, they're trying to figure out, you know, they're getting the terms down, and then they hear like cap rates and job growth and things like this. One of the best ways to get all that information or is through a broker. Like, they usually have, you know, the CBREs, the Colliers, the ARAs, the HFFs. They are big research, like, in the area. And so if you can start figuring out the terminology of looking at effective rents, historical occupancy, things of that nature, and they provide you with those reports quarterly, different reports for different cities and whatnot and what have you, like, that could expedite your investing exponentially. But you have to initially know what you're kind of looking for. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. So investment criteria, and how important would you say it is after you've established, you guys have established within three hour radius, or is that what you
within
said?
Within three hours, so we can get there. So, you know, we're managing in Knoxville, but in Louisville, we bought 132 unit deal. It's got a property manager on there. It's got some maintenance guys on there. But if we need to get there, day's drive, we can get our regional manager to get up there. We're looking at a couple hundred units up there right now, which has got 2 leasing agents. It's got 3 full-time maintenance guys. So we're able to scale it out, and we can feed off the 132 units. So that's what we're looking at. So that's why for us, it's within 3 hours. Maybe 2 or 3 years from now, we can go 5 hours. So I'm looking to get my brother to move down to Jacksonville, in St. Augustine. So he wants to start buying assets in Jacksonville. So, I mean, hey, listen, it's a family business. So maybe you start opening offices in different parts of different cities.
Now, I probably already know the answer to this, but what would you say is the number one thing that you would look for if you were going to invest out of state in a market?
Job growth.
I would look for
job growth. Mm-hmm. If you're going to invest outside, because jobs bring demand, and demand brings rising rents, and rising rents brings rising NOI. That's why properties, people don't understand. We bought a property back in 2013. One bedrooms, they were getting $365 a month for one bedrooms. That's 5.5, 6 years ago. We've raised those rents to over $600 a month for one bedrooms plus rubs. So, I mean, you're almost doubling the rents. So what's going to happen to the valuation? Valuations, obviously, they've doubled, and cap rates have dropped a little bit since then. So you see the fuel on the fire. You're not only increasing the NOI tremendously, cap rates have dropped a little bit. Now, the other thing that you need to do is to continue that rent rise. You know, what's great about it is middle class is getting this wage increase. Wages rise, but what happens? As wages rise, everything else costs more money. Rents go up, so it's an inflation hedge for us. We've got a real asset, so rents are continuing to go up. On top of that, with the affordability, we had said numbers. Knoxville, $240 a month cheaper to rent than to buy a home. So we've got a little ways to go where we can still continue to raise rents. We had a 5% rental increase last year in 2018. There's not a lot of supply coming on the market. Demand is really there. And so those are the things that you need to look for when you're looking in a market.
Nice, yeah. And I think also to go back to what you were saying about government intervention, looking at states that are landlord friendly as opposed to renter friendly. And the ones that you were mentioning, New York, California, Oregon, like a lot of these states have rent control and stipulations that are not in favor of a landlord or a real estate investor. I mean, if you think about it, if you had, we'll just say 10 units and one of your tenants doesn't want to pay, and it takes you 60 days to kick them out, that's 2 months of income that you could have, that you're missing out on, and it drops your numbers, it hurts your bottom line. Or if you invest in maybe a more friendly state, you know, like Florida or Texas, you know, those eviction notices could come out quicker. If you have a property that has a waiting list, you could, depending if you have the team and the systems in play, you can have that turned around within less than a week, and bada bing, bada boom, it's rented out. So I think it's important to also look at states that are very landlord friendly as well.
I agree. I don't want to dissuade anybody from saying, you know, you live in California or you live in Oregon or New York, don't invest in those states. Just keep an open mind. When you analyze a market, just analyze apples to apples. Analyze, you know, what's going on. And tenant laws are important, and taxes are important, and affordability is important, and job growth is important, and population growth is important, and household formation is important. A lot of things are important. Affordability is important. Absorption, deliverables are important. All that stuff is really important. Just take a look at it. And if everything's equal and the tenant laws are terrible, well, you know what? There's your answer right there. So
nice. Well said. Well, Gino, I'd like to thank you very much for being on the show. I'm going to wrap it up here. Gino, we usually ask the guests two questions here. First question being, can you describe your business in 3 words?
Vertically integrated company.
Vertically integrated company. I like that. All right. Next question. What is a pain point or biggest challenge you face right now in your business?
Scaling up the education. We're at a point right now where we're serving students. We need to hire more sales guys on, and we need to scale up the coaching. So it's a learning process. We've only been doing this really full time for the last year and a half or so, offering coaching and all that. So it's been exciting. Our students are doing deals, and it takes a while to have results, and students are having results right now. And it's that accountability piece and just learning that whole model and trying to reach as many people as possible.
Yeah. I interviewed Rod Cleef last week, and he was saying the same thing about scaling up his business and the education. He was saying that he loves the business so much that if he's doing a one-on-one, like, he's like just diving deep with like one person. He's like, oh, I just spent like 2 hours. You know, it's like, I need to figure out like how to scale and spread the wealth.
Yeah, he's great. Rod is great. He started a couple of years ago, just like we did, and he's really scaled up. He's got some great boot camps. He does a lot of live events. So he's a really good guy.
Awesome. And I believe we have one gift for the listeners. Is that correct, Gino? We have a 4-step
questionnaire. Yeah. So the 4-step questionnaire is really important when you're doing your due diligence. Take a holistic approach, right? We've got a great syndication calculator that we've created for our deals. But what you do with this 4-step questionnaire, you need to ask 4 questions. The first question is the market. Analyze the market when you're underwriting a deal. Do you like the market? Great. The market is good. The next set of questions is the owner questions. There are some questions you need to ask the owner. I'll give you a couple. How long have you owned the deal? Like we said, do you have any other assets? Why are you selling the deal? You know, what are the reasons you're selling the deal? What did you buy the deal for? Those are questions that you need to ask the owner. Once there's some type of motivation, then you've got a deal, right? Because if there's no motivation and the seller is just not motivated, don't waste your time analyzing the deal, underwriting the deal. You can look at it real quick, but it's not going to work. The third one is the property questions. We've got a bunch of questions. Flat roofs. What are the expenses? You know, what is the unit mix? All those questions on the property are really important. If they're all efficiencies, maybe I'm not buying it, but if they're 21 beds and 32 beds and 10 three beds, I like that a lot more. Let me take a deeper dive into it. And finally, the fourth set of questions are the financial questions, the underwriting and the due diligence and the numbers. So that's what we try to do. Just take a holistic approach on underwriting. It's not just the numbers. There are other factors that are involved. So let's take time and underwrite these deals properly.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much for that gift, Gino. We really do appreciate it. And if you guys want to get that gift, head on over to rejpodcast.com and click on free investor swag. Once again, that is rejpodcast.com. Thank you very much, Gino. We do appreciate that gift. Have a great day, and we will see you on the next go round.
Matthew, thank you.
All right. That was Gino Barbaro, everybody. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And of course, I made a mistake. I forgot to let Gino put his contact information in at the end, and I cut him off. So if you'd like to get a hold of Gino, you can head on over to jakeandgino.com, or you can send Gino an email at gino@jakeandgino.com. All right, guys, that does it for me. I'll see you next week. And next week's guest, we have another great syndicator coming on the show. Her name is Alina Trigrub, and I think you will find her very valuable.
Peace!
Thank you for listening to Real Estate Journeys with Matthew Baltzell. To claim your free investor swag, head on over to rejpodcast.com and click on the tab Free Investor Swag.